This is Kate Turkington on Travels with Kate, only on 101.9 High FM.
And a very, very good morning to you. Great program coming up. One of your very favourite entertainers we're going to be talking to in just a while. And a bit later on, have a pen and paper or pencil and paper ready, because I've got some really, really super books for you today, which are my lovely presses, so keep yourself or you read. But first of all, and I can see him beaming in front of me, one of our very, very favourite entertainers. How do I describe him? Theatre maker. Now, I hope you're sitting down, because this is a long laundry list, but it's wonderful. Theatre maker, comedian, singer, broadcaster, designer, foodie, from Johannesburg. He's the creative director of the Pop-Up Entertainment Company. And what does that do? It gives entertainment experiences for corporates, for corporations in South Africa. So where should we start? Welcome, Harry Sideropoulos. So great to see you.
Hello, hello. One of my most favourite humans. Hello, hello.
Thank you, Harry. And just reading your and I mean, you're so young. Mind you, according to me, everybody's so young. But you're so young to pack so much. But I thought what we'd do, let's start at the very beginning, Harry. How did growing up, how did it all begin?
Well, I went to Sahety School, which was the school that was founded by the wonderful advocate George Bezos. And there was a wonderful understanding of culture in that school. It was a very culturally motivated atmosphere. And I remember there was a wonderful Jewish lady called Hazel Yuko, who was speech and drama teacher. And I remember auditioning for a musical called Robin Hood. And I thought I know that it's very hard to believe for many people, but I was a very quiet, soft-spoken child. and I auditioned and I got the part of Little John. And I remembered the magic, that feeling of an audience applauding because they loved seeing you. And it was the one time when I felt completely myself and at ease. And that's how it started. And then from there onwards, we then did more shows, we did more musicals, all at school. And although it was a time when, you know, the rugby players and the basketball players and the football players were the ones that were getting all the attention, all of a sudden, this small little chubby boy was getting attention on stage, you know, and I loved that. Yeah. And that's when that wonderful viral virus kind of got into me and said, this is what I want to do. And from that, and then of course, I was in standard 8 when my parents worked very, very hard to send me on a European art tour. And I remember, Kate, it cost my parents 5,999 rand.
Which was a fortune in those days.
It was a fortune. Yeah. It was a fortune. We're talking about 87. Yeah. And father worked so hard. And my mother and my father said, no, it is important. He has to see the world. Just like my sister 6 years prior was sent and they did it. And it was the most magical experience, because all of a sudden, coming from an apartheid-riddled South Africa, where we were very limited with what we had access to, all of a sudden I arrive in Amsterdam. Then I arrive in London, and I'm experiencing the West End. And it was a year and a half after the Phantom of the Opera had opened. So West End was buzzing, I went to see Starlight Express. It was just amazing. And then, of course, after that, we went to magnificent Florence and Paris. And I remember that trip was a very integral key moment in my life where I went, I want this world.
Harry, we're going to leave it there for a moment. Then we're coming back to you, talking to Harry Sideropoulos. Amazing, those early tours. I did it for my kids, too.
This is Kate Turkington on Travels with Kate, only on 101.9 High FM.
And we're back. And we're back with Harry Sideropoulos. And as I said to you when I introduced him, I mean, he's a master of so many things. Telling us about growing up, going to the Haiti school, still a wonderful school, I must tell you. But all those things, Harry, this is a very difficult question. What do you like doing best?
I'll tell you what I love doing best. I love making people happy. And what does that mean? When I do something on stage and I see that gleeful look on someone's face, that makes me happy. So whether I'm cooking a meal and I'm sharing stories around love around the kitchen, whether I'm on stage making you laugh, whether I'm playful singing something, it gives me great joy to make you forget your reality for a couple of hours. And that's why when people say to me, what are you? Because I think people want to put you in a box, right? I'm an entertainer, and yes, I love making you smile, and I love making you laugh. The world is in a very difficult place at the moment. So if I can make you forget your reality for a couple of moments and put a smile on your face or make you laugh, it gives me immeasurable joy. That's what it is. When you taste my food and you hold your chest and you can't speak, that makes me happy.
Yeah. Let me just come to the food for a moment. I hate cooking. I can cook. I'm actually a very good cook, but I hate it, yeah. hate it. I'd much rather make a pot or write a book or paint a picture than I've got something. If I spend all that time cooking, people eat it. In other words, my philosophy, it's not original. Life is too short to stuff a mushroom. I know that's not your philosophy. Explain to me, try and convince me, Harry, why cooking and I know you're an absolutely wonderful cook. Just try and convince me why it's worth all the time to stuff a mushroom.
Look, if I had the list of things that you've done and achieved, I too would not be cooking. All right. I tell you what it is. It's, for me, we used to sit around the table always. My father would come home. My father would go to work and then come home. He was not one of those men who went gambling or who went out. He was a family man. And that was the time when we sat around the table. But more importantly, I would come home from school and I would sit at the kitchen table, those ones with that had covered in plastic, because God forbid good table can see the wood. It had to be covered in the horrible plastics that you buy by the meter with the pineapples. Okay, so that was what the kitchen was covered with. And I would sit there, my mom would be cooking, and I would be playing with her herbs, the spices. I would break eggs, I'd pour olive oil. And those were my moments of connection with my mom. And so for me, food is love. That's what it is. So when I cook for you, it's when I'm cooking at when I'm doing a cooking show, it's a very different experience. But when I'm cooking in my home, it's because I love you. So for me, the joy of food must be love in my world, because it's my love language. And it's comfort, isn't it? When we were young and we fell and we cut our knee, our mommies gave us a cookie. All right. And I've become like my mother. So the minute people walk in, you have 3 minutes to say salutations, blah, blah, blah. And what are you eating? What are you drinking? What can I get you? What do you want? It's my love language. And I try to hold it back a little bit, because I do at times can become quite asphyxiating. What do you mean you're not eating? What do you mean you're not hungry? But you've just, and you are hungry, you just don't know it yet. You know, it's things like that.
You know, so Harry, I think part of my thing was growing up during World War II in England. And I was telling some friends recently, I don't like bread. How can you not like bread? For, I think, from 1940 to about 1952, when rationing 100 grams of sugar a week, 100 grams of butter a week, one egg a week. I mean, I'm sure that's why I've lived so long, because I had such a good diet. But there was something, and I want you to imagine this. You can use it as a joke sometime. There was something called the National Loaf. The National Loaf. It was this white, and there were no slicing machines or anything. So you got this lump of not wrapped, wasn't wrapped, this lump of sort of white stuff, which one was brought up on because there was no alternative. So I sometimes wonder, because people couldn't cook, because there wasn't very much to cook with, that your attention went elsewhere. I don't know. Maybe I'm just using an excuse. I hate cooking.
I'll tell you what was interesting, because my parents came from, also from the, my mom was a child. My father actually fought in World War II.
Yeah.
Because there was quite a big age difference between my mom and my dad.
Yeah.
And after the Second World War, Greece went into civil war.
Yes, so I remember.
So they didn't have food. And it was a very dark time. If they thought World War II was dark, it got even darker because it was brother against brother.
Yes, dreadful.
But there was this concept of, till the very end, till my mom passed away, every time we would go to a restaurant, and I'd go, Ma, what do you want to eat? She'd go, whatever's the cheapest. And I'd go, Ma, it's okay.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
She goes, just anything. You know, it was, that was still...
Yeah.
It was still very much part of her psyche.
I think so. It's like I still collect pieces of string. You know, you couldn't get string, or it's amazing.
Yes.
I collect your, not in an anal kind of way, just in, you never know when this might never come in. Now, you've told me you love entertaining people. I want to decode that a bit, because that's very, very broad, because you're a comedian, you're an actor, you're a singer. Of all of those, is the one that perhaps you like doing best? I'm going to pin you down, Harry. I'm going to pin you down.
I love comedy.
Yeah.
I love comedy because I have a very different style of comedy. It's not stand-up.
No.
It's theatrical comedy.
Yeah.
So it's storytelling with little punch, because I have paramount respect for stand-up comedians because they have to do a joke every 8 seconds.
Yes.
There's a punchline every 8 seconds. I do storytelling with one. So at times the storytelling in itself is funny and interactive, but the punchline comes at the end. And it's physical theater. Mm-hmm. And I love having themes in my shows. And I've been very blessed to work with some of South Africa's finest directors who have really, I want to feel uncomfortable when I start any project, because it means that I'm going to be pushed.
Yes.
And for me, it's very, very important. So I've also chosen, directors who I can't charm.
There's nobody charm, Harry.
Okay, so it's like I've got people that will go, no, Harry, that's shitty. That's not, no, we're doing it. So it's very important for me. So I love comedy. But as you can see from my background, I'm still in Greece. I'm spending 3 months here.
Yeah.
And I've also realized, and I'm busy putting my cookbook together, which launches in December. And it's my first ever cookbook. But I'll tell you what is so interesting about being in Greece is it's so wonderful to be in a country where everyone talks about food all the time. All right. Like all the time. It's you're having breakfast and you're going, what are we going to have for lunch? We're having lunch. What are we going to have for? So that has been so fantastic because everyone is on exactly the same wavelength. I've got so many, my friends are a group of the United Nations. There's like, there's someone from every corner of the globe. And at some point I had a friend of mine who was non-Greek who said to me, do you guys ever not talk about food? I said, absolutely not. I said, if two or three Greeks get together for more than 10 seconds, the concept of food and the issue of food comes up. And I think it's also because it's what we do. We share love across the table with food. We talk. My godchildren come over and I cook for them and we have fun chatting. And, you know, and the food is the thing that brings us together. And I think because of my mom, and the way that she would tenderly make like a mince, for example. And then she knew that I loved mince on bread, on that government bread. That's my happy place.
Okay. And Harry, we're going to take a break, but please, at the end, I'm coming back to you. But when that cookbook comes out, even though I don't cook, please come on to the program and tell us all about it.
This is Kate Turkington on Travels with Kate, only on 101.9 High FM.
And you know, the thing, Harry, I'm talking to everybody's favourite entertainer, Harry, Sideropolis. I think Harry comedy, I think what South Africans share, I mean, as you know, I was born and raised in England, but I've been in South Africa longer than you've been alive. I think the gift that South Africans have is this ability to laugh at themselves.
Absolutely.
And that one has to do. If you can't laugh at yourself, shut up shop. Really, shut up shop.
Completely.
And I was going to ask you.
Yes.
I was going to ask you, what kind of comedy? I know you were talking about theatrical comedy and telling a story. I mean, we all love stories. We all love stories. What goes down best with an audience, do you find?
I think it depends. It depends on the audience.
Yes, but, obviously.
You know, I've been very blessed, and I've performed in South Africa. I've performed in parts of Africa. I've performed in Canada and Australia and America. And I tell you what goes right across all those countries is things that you can relate to, because that's what comedy is, isn't it? Yeah. So the comedy. So even if you are Peruvian, living somewhere in California, and I am sharing a story of being Greek and a Greek mother, or I'm sharing the story of dating on an app, everyone understands that world and that language. So the importance in when I write a piece is, can someone who, as long as they speak English, of course, anywhere in the world, find what I'm saying funny. Yes. So I have to be very careful. I mean, I did a lovely show for the Jewish community a couple of years ago called The Whole Megillah. Yeah. And what was important about The Whole Megillah was, can someone who doesn't know the word yontov, who doesn't know certain words like a shtetl or a shetl, will they be able to? So it was important for me to make sure that in my writing, for the non-Jewish audience, that they would understand it, if they would find the punchline funny. Yeah. So for me, it's things that everybody can relate to. Dating, being dumped, social media, parents, helicopter parents, schools, children. I do politics, but we are... I do satire. There are moments where I do enjoy... I mean, of course, during the Zuma years... every comedian had the most amazing, oh my God, it was just remarkable. It was a little bit like the Trump years.
Yes.
You know, you have a lot of content. You know?
A lot of material.
A lot of material. So for me, as long as somebody can relate to it, irrespective of age, and I want to be, what am I on stage? I am the naughty kid in the class that the teacher always would roll her eyes but liked. That's what I do. You know, I'm so I'll say naughty things. I will never be crass. I don't like. I mean, yes, no. I can cuss with the best of them off camera, but on stage, I don't swear. But yeah. I am the naughty. I can take you to a place just before and then pull back. And I think it's the naughtiness that people like.
We've got a very naughty face, too.
I
must tell you, when I was growing up, Harry, I went to a Loretta convent school, and I can remember the Irish nun saying to me, my maiden name was Wood, and I can remember the Mother Superior saying, Kathleen Wood, you're as bald as brass. And I cherished it. I cherished being as bold as brass.
Absolutely.
Now let's go to music. You sing beautifully. Do you have a favorite there, Harry?
Yes, I do. I love, look, I grew up with my parents who loved a wonderful melange of music, but my father was the one who introduced me to the world of cha-cha, rumba, samba, foxtrot, waltz, and then the world of big band swing.
Yes,
that was so. When I was growing up, the rest of the world was listening to Madonna, and don't get me wrong, I was enjoying Madonna too.
Yeah,
I remember listening to
you were listening to Benny Goodman.
I was listening to Benny Goodman. I remember hearing the tango for the first time, not understanding what it was and going, oh, wow, I love this. What is this? And my father would explain what it is. So when I heard da 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 pa 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 da 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 because how could you? How could you not go mad when you're listening to In the Mood? All right.
Yes,
so that is for me, the love that I have every night, every morning. I have swing and jazz. And when I say jazz, I don't really do fusion jazz. So I can't do the. I mean, I have an appreciation for it, but after like 4.5 minutes, it gets a bit too much. So I've turned 50 this year, but I feel like my music.
A mere slip of a boy.
I feel that my musical tastes are, you know, the 70s. I mean, the people that are in their 70s and 80s, that's the music, that their music when they were kids is the music that I love. Mm-hmm. I also love rock and roll.
Yes.
But I enjoy world music. I love world music, discovering music from every corner of the globe, whether it's Israeli, whether it's Greek, French, Portuguese, South American. I love music. And that's my pastime. When I want to run away from the world, I go onto YouTube and I discover music. And that is that's the joy. But swing and the big band era, Duke Ellington is my happy place. Yeah. It is my happy, like I can listen to that for 9 hours and go, oh, is that over? Like that.
Yeah. Do you know, I was at the Nelson Mandela lecture on Saturday afternoon. You know, an annual lecture hosted every year by the Nelson Mandela Foundation. I mean, their speakers, everybody from Barack Obama to Bill Gates. This year we had a Nobel Prize laureate. But at the end of, and it was a fascinating speech, Abdul-Zarrak Gerber won the Nobel Prize for Literature a few years ago. But at provoking, thought-provoking, quite shocking sometimes. Anyway, at the end of it, they introduced a group onto the stage I had never heard of called Soul, which is a cappella, a group of 3 a cappella singers from Soweto. Oh, my word. It was... And somebody said, this isn't original, somebody said to me afterwards, somebody who knows more than I do about music, that that was the purest form of music using the human voice as an instrument. And it's called Soil, sorry, not Soul, S-O-I-L. Absolutely amazing. And like you, listening to things on YouTube or whatever you've never heard, go to, they've done a lot of albums. But like you, it was the thrill of finding something new, listening to something new. And I got home, I immediately Googled them. And that's, but isn't that life, Harry? Always finding something new, learning, discovering in whatever field.
And I'll tell you one thing, and I've always said this because, you know, being a son of immigrant parents, you feel like, where do you belong? I was born in South Africa, Johannesburg.
Yeah.
My parents come from Greece. My father's roots are from Asia Minor, from Turkey. My mother's are from the island of Kefalonia, which is close to the Italian shore. And I felt this tug of war, where do I belong? Yeah. And the later in my years, I realized, first of all, home is where important people are. That for me is very important. Okay. Home is where important people are. And I have important people in South Africa and I have important people in Greece. And I've also realized that my heart is Greek, but my soul is South African.
That's interesting.
And it could be the other way around, but it's not. My heart is Greek, but my soul is South African. And I tell you what we have as somebody who has traveled the world like you have. What I have realized, I know all our imperfections. I understand and I see all our blemishes. I'm not seeing South Africa through Pollyanna rose-colored spectacles. I see it for what it is. But I tell you what we do have. As someone who has traveled, not badly, I've traveled a couple of destinations in my life. What I love, and specifically about Joburg, are the people.
Absolutely.
And let me tell you, yes, I'm here in Greece and I'm loving the nightlife. I've been able to walk on the pavements at 2 o'clock in the morning, going to, there was Placido Domingo performing here a couple of nights ago, Melody Gardot, Sting, Coldplay. I mean, it's amazing, the theater, all of that. Mm. But I tell you what we do have. We have a humanity And when I arrive, and I love it when I arrive at the airport at Oliver Tambo, and there was a lovely lady with a, I think her name was Tapisile, I can't remember, but she had a name tag on. And I had just come back from Canada, and I said to her, Tapisile, how are you? And she looked at me, and she went, yo, I am tired. And I love the fact that she looked at me and she said, I'm tired. And I said, I'm so happy to be back home. She goes, sure, there's no place like home. I said, you're damn right there isn't. And I think there's something about this, the Joburg people, because we are, there's a warmth that, let's just say, that doesn't prevail in many other provinces, no, as in Joburg, all right? And I miss that. And I realize that I can be in paradise, but if I don't have that human connection where I'm sitting at a Pick and Pay, and I was sitting at a Pick and Pay looking at the chocolate section, and this woman walks up to me, she goes, Aunt Cadbury's chocolate's just the best. And you would never get that in Greece. And that's just the reality.
Do you know, Harry, when I first came to South Africa, one of my last stories, not yours, was in 1970. I had three children, a 12-year-old, a 10-year-old, and a babe in arms. And we drove up in an old car from Cape Town, and we got to Kimberley, and it was pumping. The place was going absolutely mad. We had nowhere to stay. We went to a place called the Diamond Horseshoe Motel, pumping, packed, pushed our way through to the desk and said, can we have two rooms, please? They said, Mum, my throat, it's the curry cup. It was the only time that Greek was won against the then Northern Transvaal. So, and very uncharacteristically, I burst into tears. Here I am in a strange country, three children, exhausted husband, burst into tears. Two big oaks standing by the reception desk said, ach, don't worry, Tanny, you can have our rooms. That was my first experience of the friendliness of South African people.
And I'll tell you something else. During the World Cup 2010, I was sitting in Parkhurst, and right on the pavement, we were having at a cafe, and this Lebanese, two Lebanese men walked up to me and said, hi, excuse me, we're here for the World, we need to get to Hyde Park. Can we walk from here? And I went, oh, I said, I mean, you can, but it'll take you like an hour, it's far. And I said, how many are you? And he says, there's eight of us. And at the time I was driving a large car, and I said, come, I'll take you. And he looked at me and he goes, you are the third person that has done that to us. Yeah. Okay. And I said, he says, the only difference is the other ones, there were two people and they took us in two cars. And do you know how friendly people walked, yes, away from Johannesburg, and they went, if somebody is in town, bring them over for a braai, come on over. Or, yes, you know, the Jewish community, I love them. Yes. Come over for, yes, Yontem, come over for, yep, Shabbos. That does not exist in many other parts of the world. Let, mm-hmm, me tell you. Mm-hmm. And that for me is the beauty of what we have. We still have not lost our humanity. Exactly. And in parts of the world, unfortunately, that humanity is dwindling.
Exactly. Very last, final question. The future, Harry, what have you got planned for us?
So I've got my cookbook that gets released in December.
And be sure to remember me. I'll get some. Yes, in fact, you can cook for me, please.
I will cook for you, and we can talk and cook.
Okay.
It's called Every Taste of Memory. Okay. And the beautiful thing about the book is that it's filled with stories. So there's cooking, but there's also stories. We've shot the book half in Johannesburg and the other half in Athens, which is magnificent.
Oh, super.
So it's wonderful. And it's also a coffee table book. So it's not, yeah, just recipe.
Okay.
So there's that. I'm then working on my new show, which is called Halfway to Nowhere. I've turned 50 and I have a lot to say. All right. I have a lot to say. So that's my new comedy that gets released next year. And very exciting. I'm joining forces again with the amazing Adam Howard from the Johannesburg Big Band. And we are doing four Christmas shows.
Oh, wow.
Four Christmas shows. This time we're doing it in the East Rand, because a couple of months ago we did Swinging Las Vegas, and that was at Monte Cassino.
Yes, now I was there.
Yes. So now we're doing our Christmas show in the Big Top Arena of Carnival City. So it's 3,500 people a night, times four nights. And I'm performing with some wonderful, wonderful stars. I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, the names yet, so I won't. Yeah. But some wonderful stars. And I'm going to be performing and singing with a 20-piece big band swing. That happens in December, 14th, 15th, 16th of December. Those are my projects for now.
Okay. Please let us know a bit nearer the time. Just pop an email to us or WhatsApp saying show is starting.
Absolutely.
Whatever,
will.
Please. Oh, Harry,
and
such a pleasure.
I adore you, Kate Turkington. I absolutely adore you. And you're listening. It's so funny. I'm so lucky to have you and to share with you. I think it's wonderful.
Thank you.
You're amazing.
Thank you.
Amazing.
Thank you. Thank you. That's made my day. Okay, we're going to take a break and then I'm coming back with some books for you.
This is Kate Turkington on Travels with Kate, only on 101.9 High FM.
Okay, people, some gorgeous books for you. So have a pen and pencil or paper and pencil or have your phone or whatever. First of all, the most beautiful book about the most beautiful garden in Africa. The book is called Kirstenbosch, of course, The Most Beautiful Garden in Africa by Brian J. Huntley. And it's published by Strake Nature. And you may well want to get this book for yourself and keep it, or it will make the most perfect present for anybody you know who loves gardens. You know, those gardens, Kirstenbosch, were first established after the unification of South Africa in 1910. So that's what, we're in 2024. Well, you do the math. They've been going such a long time. And the book tells the story of how the garden, they call it the garden. I call it the gardens because I've only been there a few times, but the variety and the diversity of what you see there, it seems to me you can't put that in one word, gardens, got to be gardens. Anyway, the book tells how the garden came to be, setbacks, yes, it had lots of setbacks, and of course it's triumphs, and also not how it gives so much pleasure to so many people, but it's also a fountain of knowledge, a repository of knowledge because of its prized flora and all its attractions. So it's a new edition of the book. The story's been brought right up to date. It talks about the new developments, the attractions, and it really is. I wish you could see it. I wish I could show you the cover. It's got a beautiful old tree, and it's got clivias, which, of course, have just stopped blooming in Johannesburg. Beautiful orange clivias on the cover. But as I say, buy it, treat yourself or treat somebody you know to the most wonderful present. Kirstenbosch, The Most Beautiful Garden in Africa, published by Strake Nature. And then another most beautiful book. You may have seen it. They've made it into an animated feature. It's on Netflix. It's only 15 minutes long, called The Boy, The Mole, The Fox and the Horse by Charlie Macri. If you haven't seen it, go to Netflix and watch it. It's the most beautifully illustrated book. It'll take you 20 minutes to read it, possibly, but you'll stop and you'll look at the drawings and the message of it. The message of it is love, peace, without being cheesy or with it. Charlie Mackesy, M-A-C-K-E-S-Y. It's The Boy, the Mole, the Fox and the Horse. And I actually watched it all on my own, sitting in my little cottage. And I don't do tears. I actually cried at the end. It's about friendship. It's about kindness. It's about the human heart. And if you are feeling down and miserable and full of doom and gloom, I can really recommend it. It will cheer you up. So buy the beautiful book. It's published by Penguin. Again, keep it for yourself or give it as the most beautiful, beautiful present to somebody. The Boy, the Mole, the Fox and the Horse by Charlie Mackesy. So there you are. It's a book published by Penguin. Or go on to Netflix and just give up 20 minutes, 15, 20 minutes of your time and watch it. It is, and of course, the animated version is using the same illustrations as the book uses. It's not anime. It's not sort of Japanese go, 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 anything like K-pop music. It is just so, so beautiful and touching. So there you are, two beautiful books for you. And finally, I've just finished reading. I'm a great fan of the novelist Robert Harris, and I know some of you probably will be immediately nodding your head. Robert Harris, of course, he wrote all those wonderful books about Rome, Imperium, Pompeii. He wrote those amazing books about World War II, Fatherland, Enigma, Archangel. Oh, and the latest one, well, not the latest, the one I've got in my hand is the latest. The one last year was, of all things, about the guys who murdered King Charles I in Britain and fled to the New World, fled to America, and how they lived in hiding. And Robert Harris, of course, is a journalist, supreme award-winning journalist. The book I'm talking about is called Precipice by Robert Harris. It's published by Hutchinson. Every book Robert Harris has written has been a number one bestseller, by the way. Now, what is this one about? Go back, you know, war. I'm so old, I've seen so many wars come and go. This takes place in the summer of 1914, just before World War I broke. It was a glorious, golden summer. The world was at peace. It was the most marvelous time. And then suddenly you remember what happened, probably from your history books. Grand Duke Ferdinand was assassinated in Sarajevo, and World War I began. How many million people were killed in that war? Millions, millions. The Battle of the Somme. I think the Allied forces gained about 100 yards, less than 100 metres, and I forget how many millions. Two of my family, my father-in-law's brothers were killed at the Somme. Millions of young men all over Europe, German, French, American, Canadian, New Zealand, South African, Delville would remember, were killed. Anyway, this place takes place in London in summer 1914. So think about it. The world is on the brink of catastrophe. Who is the Prime Minister of England? Herbert Asquith, 63 years old, comes from a very humble working home. You know, we're having this thrown at us by the Keir Starmers in the UK, by the vice presidents to be in America, how they come from working class roots, you know, doing that, trying to get there with the people. Anyway, the Prime Minister is Herbert Asquith, very, very clever Prime Minister. What does he do? He falls in love with a 26-year-old young aristocrat, Venetia Stanley. She's very clever, she's very bored, and she's very reckless. And they conduct a clandestine affair. But it doesn't stop there, because then what he does puts all the world at risk. I'll be back in a moment to tell you.
This is Kate Turkington on Travels with Kate, only on 101.9 High FM.
And welcome back. And if you love novelist Robert Harris, who I do, read Precipice, his latest one. I'm telling you, it's about the story of the then Prime Minister in 1914, just before the Great War, World War One, broke out, having an affair with a 26-year-old young aristocratic woman. But what he does, it's almost unbelievable. And Robert Harris was given access to his letters to Venetia, to his young lover. You cannot believe he shares the most sensitive matters of state with her in letters, in writing. He posts them. Can you believe in those days, London had 12 posts a day, 12 deliveries a day of the post. He wrote to her. He sent her the telegrams he'd got from Germany. Oh, sharing, as I said, the most sensitive matters of state with her, any one of which, had they been intercepted by the enemy, which was Germany at the time, Austria, could have been disastrous for us all, wherever we were in the world. So what Robert Harris does, he's very seamlessly wove fact and fiction. And all the letters of Asquith, the Prime Minister, that he uses in the book are real. Some of Venetia's letters didn't survive, so he's made those up. But, oh, it's such a thrilling novel. And even if you're not interested in history, just Europe, again, on the brink of a war, just as the world is now, comes and goes, comes and goes. Vietnam War, Korean War. I don't want to sound cynical, but I'm a great believer in the resilience of the human spirit. With that little bit of Facebook cheesiness philosophy, I'm going to leave you for this week. So travel safely, look after yourselves, and look after others too. And thanks always to Craig Guthrie, my sound engineer, and Senator Betsy, my producer, and thanks to all of you.